Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Lowell Ponte. He is one of the co-authors of We Have Seen the Future, and It Looks Like Baltimore. And we'll get his take on whether he thinks Baltimore can come back because it's representative of the rest of the country, of course. And welcome back to Coast, Lowell Ponte with us. We'll get to your calls, too. So, Lowell, can Baltimore, like the rest of the country, can it be turned around?
There is a dark side and a bright side to Baltimore. When I say we've seen the future and it looks like Baltimore, yes, it does, but that could be a positive. For example, among the presidential contenders, we have a famed neurosurgeon who came to greatness in a hospital in Baltimore. His name is Ben Carson. That is part of the greater complex put together by a very wealthy person more than a century ago. And all of that now has taken, it has given us a thing called Johns Hopkins University and Hospital. And an example of that, after the riots last year, we turned on our TVs one day, and there was a spacecraft passing the minor planet Pluto, showing us that amazing Valentine shape on the surface of the planet that was like a Valentine from the cosmos there for us. And most of us looking at would say, well, we can still do it. We still have great spacecraft. This must be coming from Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena, or this must be coming from the Kennedy Space Center. No, 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 boys and girls. That spacecraft was built and was being controlled from the Advanced Physics Lab at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. The amazing technology that first brought people to Baltimore as the Silicon Valley of its time in the early 1800s, that technology is still there. All those geniuses and scientists are still there. Detroit saw, with the collapse of industry there, government become the main employer in the city.
That's right.
Government is not the main employer in Baltimore, despite all of its problems. The main employer is Johns Hopkins University and Hospital.
Which is good news.
Which is very good news. So there can be an extremely bright future for Baltimore as well. We just have to get rid of the people who are trying to drag the city downward. I will call them progressives. A progressive is not a liberal. In fact, a progressive is the opposite of a liberal. Liberals in the 19th century, and I speak as a libertarian who's one of them, believed in free enterprise, small government, individual responsibility, low taxes, and so on.
Yeah.
That is not what progressives believe in. Progressivism emerged out of the French Revolution and the Romantic movement in Europe 200 years ago. It's characterized by wanting to replace the tradition of religion and individualism with a collectivist tradition based on science and big government, creating a kind of heaven on earth here, creating a new Eden without any God involved. An Eden that will be led by a tiny elite of people like Michael Bloomberg, who are so much smarter than we are, they can tell us we should only be allowed to drink a 16-ounce cola drink with lunch. that is the essence of progressivism. And, of course, as I said earlier, if you're going to have a paternalistic government, you need to have an infantilized population. You need to turn most of the people into, in effect, children, so that they will be reliably dependent on the government. Then you add to that the fact that among the metastasized forms that progressivism took in Europe are all the collectivist philosophies, which ultimately are not that different from each other. National socialism, socialism, communism, Marxism, today's welfare states, and so on, they're all remarkably similar in that paternalistic attitude that discourages individual thought and ideas. Now, of course, as it deepens in its power, what we see is what Craig Smith and I, my co-author of six books now, has called donkey drag.
What's that?
That is, there is a consequence. In fact, there are several chilling consequences when you have a collectivist government that's anti-capitalist, that wants all power ultimately to devolve to the government. And that is, in such a society, who's going to invest?
Nobody.
What incentive would you have to put your money at risk knowing that in the next election, the political party dedicated to this could take over and continue their, in effect, expropriation of your property by higher taxes, higher regulations, mandates, and the like? So it becomes a tremendous deterrent. We calculated at 25% of the economy, meaning we would have 25% more jobs, we'd be 25% richer if there was not a Democratic Party as there is today. Not, it doesn't even matter whether it wins or loses. What matters is that it is a threat to investment just by being there and being capable of winning. And so that has economic consequences, but there may be an even deeper consequence we've written about, George. And that is, there is a fair amount of evidence now, as we've documented in our books, that there is such a thing as an entrepreneurial gene. You know, in human history, only 2% of people ever left the land where they were born to move to somewhere else seeking more freedom and more opportunity. The U.S. just happens to be full of people like that, because that's who our ancestors were. We were at the time the freest country on earth. Now, if you are drawn by an impulse to leave oppression, leave high taxes, and seek freedom, what happens to you when the country you've come to and made your home in now becomes like the country you fled from in the first place? The result, we argue, is stress, enormous psychological stress that you're losing your freedom, losing your free enterprise, and so on. And that is manifest in heart attacks, in cancer. We would even argue in the obesity epidemic in the United States, because when people feel that they're facing an incipient famine or a shortage, one unconscious response to that is to eat more, to put on fat. And so I think there may actually be an economic origin to part of the obesity epidemic we face in America.
Yeah, some people, it's based on depression, I think. That happens.
Yeah, I mean, after all, food is a drug. I mean, we eat comfort food. We eat things that will boost the levels of serotonin or other soothing or comforting or endorphin-like drugs in our body. So we eat more sugar. We eat more fat. We eat a lot of things designed to drug us. Meanwhile, the only thing that had stopped us from being more like, well let me take this to a different point. One thing that had always frustrated progressives, especially left-wing progressives, about America is to win a class warfare, according to Marxist theory, you have to have a proletariat. You have to have a huge class of people who have nothing to lose but their chains. People who hate capitalism, people who see that they have no prospect of success or becoming richer. They've never been able to grow that in American soil. But we've never had an indigenous proletarian class. The poor here have always come and said, we don't want to overthrow the rich. We want to become the rich. Well, that isn't proletarianism.
No.
So what is Barack Obama in particular doing now? Oh, he's carrying out the largest gerrymander in human history. He is literally redrawing the border of the United States to take in all of Mexico and half of Central America. That is a gerrymander. And the purpose is to allow him to import the proletariat from Latin America that he could not grow here native on American soil.
And what happens
in the long run? It'll work for him because the Hispanics he's bringing in actually have a lot of conservative moral values. They're faithful, they're wonderful family people, they're hardworking, they have a work ethic, they're anti-abortion and so on. Ultimately, they will turn into Republicans, whatever that means.
So the plan will backfire.
Two or three generations before that happens, and in that time, the progressives assume they'll have been able to lock down total power here.
Let's take some calls for you here, Lowell, as they line up. Let's go to Ben in Florida to get things started. Ben, go ahead.
Hey, I've been listening to y'all. I love your show, and I agree with what you said, but I do agree with one, disagree with one thing.
Okay, what's that?
The proletariat has become the Congress. They think of themselves as an aristocracy, and they think they've become the ruling class. And it just won't work here. You know, I talk to a lot of people that are progressives and Democrat, and they want democratic socialism, and they tell all these countries in Europe and stuff, but the problem with those countries is that they have 70 or 80 million people in them. We have 360 million people in this country, and it's not going to work here. You know, I am an Ayn Rand philosophy person, and what I foresee coming is Atlas Shrugged. And mark my words, I hate to say this, but it's going to lead to a civil war. They've driven a class wedge in this country that will not be extracted without bloodshed. don't like it, but that's just the way it is. We've got 47% of the people that live off the dole, and 53% of the people pay taxes. The top 10% of the people in the country pay 80% of the taxes in this country, and they want to tax them more. They can pick up and leave this country, and then we're all going to be, where are we going to be then? I mean, you know, a billionaire can pack his money off to Switzerland, leave, and not come back. We can't do that. You know, the middle class can't do that.
No, they can't.
And you got these two like Bernie Sanders says, oh, well, we need a 90% income tax. Oh, well, yeah, well, I'll just leave the country. I'll convert my money to gold and bearer bonds, and I'll leave and go pay taxes somewhere else. You know, it just will not work here. It's a
failure here to buy gold.
And gold is starting to rise, too, Lowell.
Gold is just, get on that before it lifts off much further. No, I agree with Ben and a lot of what he's saying. I'm a libertarian. I'm not quite pure enough to be an Ayn Rand objectivist. But our ancestors came here when they were lower class or lower middle class or simply craftsmen. You could theoretically leave the country. And this is part of what our next writing project is going to be about, Craig and myself, which is they're now slamming and locking all the doors that make it used to make it easy for you to leave the way your ancestors left another country once to come here. They don't want your people able to now pick up and go to a freer place as your ancestors did. And so, for example, the IRS now has implemented rules with Obama's approval that allow it to simply neutralize your passport. It can turn your passport off. So you will not be allowed to leave. They have now greatly increased the tax burden. In fact, Hillary Clinton has said she wants on businesses there to be the kind of tax they had before World War II in Germany, where if a company wanted to leave, it would have to sacrifice a quarter of its entire net worth to the government to be allowed to leave. I mean, if you saw the data that we have compiled, you would be utterly terrified at what they're doing. You would suddenly begin to put all the pieces together, and you'd say, this is not a coincidence.
Yet are there...
They're locking the escape fence.
Are there any of the candidates out there, on either party, though, who are going to show you the light? I don't see that.
Well, of course not.
No.
I mean, they are part of the government. And so ultimately, government is what... This is why I'm saying, if we had a monarchy, at least you would have some people who don't care about power and glory for themselves. But what you have a democracy, that's what makes most people run for office. And even if they're idealists when they get there, they quickly learn that is not how you advance your career.
I mean, when Kennedy ran, Lowell, he wanted power too, didn't he?
Well, the whole Kennedy family came from the tradition of power.
Yes. They had all the money, and they needed the power.
And they did wonderful things with their power. For example, during Prohibition, the senior Kennedy was able to import vast quantities of Pinch and Hagen-Haig and White Horse Scotch and distribute that as medicinal alcohol with a legal government permit.
He did well. He did very, very well.
That's what power gives you.
That's right. Jimmy in Texas.
I say Hillary Clinton should volunteer to give away all the money she's accumulated. You challenge her with that and just watch how fast she evades it.
Jimmy in Texas. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Yeah, you were talking about the infantilization of America here and stuff. I think you can trace that back to about 20 years ago whenever they started giving gold stars, participation trophies. I mean, gold stars when you're a failure, participation trophies. Everybody gets a hug. All the kids were taught that everything's supposed to be equal. Everything's supposed to be fair. Well, now that they're 18 or 20 years old, they're out in the world. They can't find a job after being told, hey, you stick in school, you go to college, you'll have a job, you'll have this and that. They don't have any of that stuff. And they're very angry. They're very upset. They've been lied to all their lives. Well, along comes Uncle Bernie here with a big hug for everybody, free college, free goodies, free everything. What do you think about that?
Well, look at the University of Missouri, where they've now had kids protesting, saying, ooh, I mustn't be subjected. I mean, it's a microaggression if I have to hear views that don't already agree with what I've been brainwashed to believe. Ooh, I don't want to have to deal with anything controversial. Oh, anyone who disagrees with me should be silenced. on the campus. You know, what amazes me is these kids have borrowed a lot of money and have put in a lot of work to get a degree from that university. Now imagine in 2 years they go to an employer who wants to hire somebody, and they're standing there with three other people, and they say, well, I've got my degree from the University of Missouri. And the employer will look at them and say, oh, you got the degree from that university that hates capitalism and that believes in government control of everything and that taught you to whine and cry because somebody was confronting you with ideas that might actually make you think. You think I'm good? In other words, they've destroyed the value of their own college degree by creating a university that now has that reputation. It's just amazing. I mean, how dumb can these kids be?
Your thoughts on Vladimir Putin as we look at all our presidential candidates. What do you think of this guy as a leader?
You have to remember, Russia has never been part of the Western tradition, and I speak as a man with a Russian wife. They have never known democracy. They have never, they're simply not a Western country. And so what they favor is, as a Russian people, is strength. They want a czar. They don't want a democratic leader. And accordingly, Putin gives them that czar-like figure. But he comes out of an enormous tradition of corruption there. He may, in fact, only be a front figure for an elite of corrupt forces in the country.
That could be. That could be.
And
they say he's one of the richest men in the world.
If you were weak, you would be destroyed. You know, in Israel, they have a saying, they're either at your feet or at your throat. And it's much better to keep them at your feet, if that's the choice. And that is part of what Putin does.
Well, so we look at Putin, we look at what's going on with China, we look at what's happening here. Is it possible that we're going to have two candidates pop in that we didn't even think about? And I don't mean a Bloomberg. What do you think?
So which candidate do you have in mind?
I don't know. That's the thing.
Well, we do have this window that is closing to be able to get on enough state.
That's right. It's and you miss Super Tuesday, you've missed it.
Yeah, well, I think even in the case of Bloomberg with all his money, he's at a point where he might not be able to get on enough state ballots to get enough electoral votes to be able to become president. He might be able to cause enough chaos, though, to throw things into the House of Representatives, now run by the Republicans.
A brokered convention.
So the question is, what are they going to do? You know, I look back historically, for example, at the year 2000 and before, when Bill Clinton was impeached by the Congress, and then the Senate refused to remove him from office.
Yeah, not convicted, but he was impeached. There's no doubt about
impeached.
That.
The only elected president ever to be impeached.
We're going to come back, Lowell, in just a moment. We're going to take final phone calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, our next stop on our magical mystery tour, Conscious Life Expo in a couple weeks here in Los Angeles. Full details at our highlight reel at coasttocoastam.com. And also get the latest updates and highlights from the show by signing up for my free daily newsletter. It's called Coast Zone. Just go to coasttocoastam.com, scroll down to the bottom of the page. On the right side, click the link for Coast Zone. It's free to sign up at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast, final segment here with Lowell Ponte as we talk about just all things America right now. Lowell, it sounds like, and I guess Craig would share your thoughts, that we still have a rough few years ahead of us, don't we?
Well, we do, and we're on at a pivot point. I mean, 49.5% of households in America now have somebody living there who gets a government check. So the whole household has an incentive to keep those checks coming. Once that gets above 50%, they found at the London School of Economics, it's very hard to roll back, if ever. And, of course, that means the society has more and more takers, fewer and fewer makers, and the makers will have every incentive to flee the country. And that will be a rather dour space. We already have 94 million people who can't or won't find full-time work. We have a society where you could move to Hawaii right now, George, and get $60,000 a year in welfare for laying on the beach and surfing. I mean, why work? And this is, I mean, when work is penalized, when non-work is rewarded, when people are encouraged to think and act like children rather than grown-ups, when we have the new economy of things like Uber, which has a great deal of positive about it, but it is different from the American dream. I mean, we built this country on the American dream of individual responsibility. Well, Uber does that.
Yeah, it's the new technology.
And a lot of other things. But you see, you don't actually wind up owning the business.
No.
And the difficulty with that is we wind up having a renter society, in effect. Young people are now almost afraid to buy a house because they saw what happened to their parents' investment that was supposed to be so secure in their homes. And we've made ourselves incredibly vulnerable. We've been running on 0% interest from the government, which is another way of saying free money if you happen to be the government or a big enough company or person, but not to the rest of us. And so the stock market has been running as a casino on this free money. Everything else has been struggling. Everything else has been pulled down. For example, it used to be you'd put your money in a bank account. Well, how much interest do they pay you on your bank account now?
Hey, pretty soon you're going to have to pay them to keep it there.
You'll not only have to keep them, but they've deliberately pursued a policy that the Fed calls financial repression. This is their own term. The essence of which is they will hold what you're paid in interest below the real rate of inflation, meaning you lose money every day you have a bank account. In an earlier book called Don't Bank on It, the unsafe world of 21st century banking, Craig and I investigated 20 major risks to your bank account, which can now simply be taken by the government, which you can't even reliably take out yourself, especially not in cash. Your bank spies on you. Communist China has 125,000 full-time cyber warriors in their military who just put on their uniform every day and tap into Western computers, including banking computers. We were talking about China. The Great Wall of China in today's dollars cost trillions of dollars and hundreds of thousands of lives to build. Did it really work? No, it didn't really work, because a small army of Mongols, say, would come up to the wall where there was a gate, and at the gate they would knock. And the gatekeeper would come to the Great Wall of China gate, and the Mongol leader would say, I've got this big bag of gold for you if you just let us go through. And, you know, there's enough corruption then as now in Chinese culture there that, of course, the gatekeeper would just say, I'll take the gold, go on through, don't bother fighting with us. And so the Great Wall of China built at all that cost. Today we have firewalls, of course, around your bank account, which is now nothing but electronic blips in the computer. It isn't real money anymore. There's no money in the vault. In fact, in Sweden, in our book, we did an analysis. What would happen if Jesse James tried to rob a bank in Stockholm today? Well, they'd look at him and laugh, and they'd say, we don't have ordinary money in this bank anymore. Everything we do is electronic or paper transfers, but we don't have real cash. So then Jesse James would be told to throw down his gun by the bank manager, and it'll be okay, because people will let you will count you as insane. They won't send you to prison. They'll be very nice to you, because everybody here knows this is a bank with no money in it. I mean, that's what we're now moving to, a cashless society like that, where all transfers will be electronic and will go through a government-monitored computer and be taxed. And there will be no more financial freedom, and there will be no more money in the sense we're used to. And that's what's very rapidly rushing upon us. We should sometimes talk about this at length when we have time. Oh, in the meantime, you mentioned our book, We Have Seen the Future, and it looks like Baltimore, about the American dream versus the progressive dream. We have a 16-page synopsis of that book that we'd be happy to give everybody listening right now absolutely free. It has a lot of mind-boggling information and documentation in it, and all they have to do is call a toll-free number. Could I give the number for the
little course.
Synopsis?
Of course, sure thing.
Yeah, it's 800-630-1494. That's 1-800-630-1494. Or as I like to say, think of Columbus sailing the ocean blue in 1492, but not quite. 1-800-630-1494. Just do it now while you're thinking about it. Leave your name and number, and we'll get back to you. And this way we can tell you what the next six books coming out in our series of 12 books will be about when they come out. You can also go to thefuturelookslikebaltimore.com and see more about it there.
Okay, let's take some final calls here for you.
That gift to your listeners.
International line, Rob in Vancouver, welcome to the show. Hi, Rob.
Hello, thanks for having me on, guys.
Sure thing.
Make it quick. I just want to present an idea and then maybe get your thoughts on it. My big concern I have is what I call, like to call the wine industry. You have all the charities, foundations, interest groups that are started on a good notion, but they're there to oppose development or some other notion. And then once the organizations become big, I mean, people are paid well, they have money going through, there's no reason for these groups to dissolve. So they just continue to find a new subject or a new something to target and just whine and whine and whine and intervene on everything. And it seems, at least from my perspective, people start asking, why would you even start trying to do something if you need big regulatory approval?
Yeah, and part of the challenge is in the world, in our history, it has always been easier to obstruct something than it has been to actually build something. I mean, they can always find a pretext for obstructing what you might want to do. This is how labor unions operate, for example. This is how a lot of institutions now operate. And of course, in the case of some of these, as you say, initially well-meaning organizations, they've developed very cushy positions for themselves. They have prestige, they have a lot of money, and they don't want to let that go. They just become another extension of politics. And as the way politics works, for example, I wrote a book about the global climate situation, and I was for 15 years, the science editor at Reader's Digest. You know how the global warming game works at that level? Let's say you're John and you're a young scientist, and all you care about is researching the sex life of frogs in Guatemala, right? That's your big love in life. But no one will give you money to do that research until a senior scientist whispers in your ear, and the very next day you take your grant application and you change the title on it. Now you want to study the impact of global warming on the sex life of frogs in Guatemala. And the moment you put that title on it, the government will offer you millions of dollars for your research because now it is helping bolster their agenda, which is, of course, bigger government, higher taxes, more opposition to capitalism in general. Or as a U.S. senator once told a group of scientists, we ought to ride the global warming issue. This was Senator Tim Wirth, Democrat of Colorado. We ought to ride the global warming issue because even if it proves false, it will lead us to make changes we want to make anyway. Changes meaning tear down capitalism, build up government, give government total regulatory power over everything in the private sector. You know, that's how they do it. They just bring people aboard a gravy train by showing scientists, no matter what you do, you can be of use to pushing the global warming agenda.
All right, back to some more calls. Will in the Bronx in New York. Hey, Will, go ahead. Welcome to the show.
How you doing, George? Great show as usual.
Thank you, sir.
Look, I would like to give you some information I don't think you've added to your equation. What's going to happen when technology, which has wiped out a lot of employment here, will wipe out more than outsourcing ever did and create global homelessness? And I'll get off the phone.
When your job is taken over by a robot, well, that will happen. It'll happen all the faster if you push the wage up on your job. If you say a hamburger flipper is going to get $15 an hour, that just hastens the day when it's cheaper for the company to automate that job. So it's going to be very rough on people who are not ready to be re-educated here. On the other hand, what's being established right now by the progressives is a world where you will have an automatic minimum wage. They're also starting to do this in Europe. You won't call it welfare anymore. You will just be guaranteed X number of dollars every month whether you work or not.
You think that'll happen here?
To the extent they can. I mean, Margaret Thatcher was right in that purported saying, you know, socialism works very well until you run out of other people's money. At a certain point, there's no more money to pay for any of this. The government has, for almost a decade now, been manufacturing the money out of thin air.
Fiat money,
to keep
right?
It running. But at a certain point, nobody will accept that money anymore. And you notice that China is a leading country in now promoting its own renminbi or yuan as an alternative to the American monopoly as a global reserve mm-hmm. currency. China has a lot more gold than they talk about having. They're having a little economic struggle right now because they had pegged to the dollar for a long time and played financial games and manipulation. And they now have to iron that out. They're also changing their economy to a more consumer-oriented society. But once that's done, the International Monetary Fund has already approved stepping up the status of the Chinese currency to compete with ours. Iran, after our agreement, just announced today it will now accept the euro instead of the dollar.
Yeah, they kind of did a double cross on us, didn't they?
Saudi Arabia had propped up the dollar after Richard Nixon broke the last link to gold in 1971 by, in effect, creating oil dollars by saying it would only sell oil in the world market to people who bought it in dollars. And that kept the dollar's value relatively strong. But if that's pulled out, if that prop is pulled out from under us, then what is the dollar? It's just a piece of paper out there. It's no stronger than the U.S. military might or cultural might, and those things are now deteriorating in the world. We're no longer a reliable ally to a lot of people like the Saudis.
How did we lose what we once had, and that was dominance? What happened?
Do I have 30 seconds to answer that?
You have 30 seconds.
We lost it by losing the American dream ideals, our work ethic. We decided that we would become a service economy based on all kinds of very limited service, like printing money that had nothing backing it. And as I say, we traded in an American dream that worked brilliantly for 100 plus years for a bunch of redistributionist notions that have failed everywhere they've been tried in history. I mean, we're trading in a proven winner for a proven loser economically and culturally just because it advantages certain people politically.
Cornelius in Louisiana. Hello there, Cornelius.
Hello, George and Lowell. And I want to say, Tommy and all the Coast to Coast listeners, laissez les bon temps rouler. Let the good times roll. It's Fat Tuesday Mardi Gras. I wish you all were all down here to enjoy the parades and everything.
We do, too.
My French ancestors came originally from Listen. Paris, and then went up the Mississippi.
Well, that's great, Lowell. But my question for you, sir, I've been watching this stuff just like you are, Lowell. And I'm so glad, George, I wish he'd keep you on for 4 hours. And the guy that was on the health, he needs to put you on for 4 hours. But in Europe, the banking system's going down. That caused our stock market to go down. And I just want to know from you, when do you think the economic collapse is going to happen? And I'm the God, gold, and Bible bullets and beans, man. All right.
Yeah, he's so wise. When will it go down? We now have a faith-based currency. It's as good as people's willingness to believe in it. On the day people stop believing in it, it all caves in. And, of course, the more we play games to give people nothing. I mean, you know what the number one export by the United States is right now? Debt.
Debt.
It's selling our debt paper to other countries out there. Right now, 71% of government spending is either for social programs or for paying the interest on the debt. And that is going up like a skyrocket. I mean, that in another 25 years, there will be no money in the government for anything else, not for national defense, not for fire and police services, not for curing cancer, not for anything. All the money will be going to social transfer programs and paying on the debt.
And, of course, they'll be taxing us more.
Well, of course. Well, you say we. What do you mean we?
you, me.
Well, the challenge is they're going to continue taxing the people who have money, and they're not going to tax the people who don't have money. So they create a tremendous incentive just to live as a dependent, just to let the government care for you. As I said, in Hawaii today, they'll pay you $60,000 a year in welfare just to lay on the beach.
For how long?
Well, theoretically, indefinitely. This is why Hawaii is one of the five states, like Illinois, on the verge of collapse internally.
Jeez. Gorgeous state, too. Lowell, almost out of time. We've got about a minute left. I'd like you to wrap things up by giving out your websites and where people can get your book.
Oh, if they'd like the book, they're happy to get that too. Depending on how much you really like reading, they might even give the book away. I don't know. But try calling 800-630-1494. That's 1-800-630-1494. Or as I said before, think of Columbus sailing the ocean blue in 1492, but not quite. It's 1-800-630-1494. The website is thefuturelookslikebaltimore.com. And you will find it a mind-boggling read. I mean, you'll never be able to view politics or economics the same way. And you'll learn a lot of amazing things about American history.
Now you
sure learn about Martin O'Malley, the now disappeared Democratic candidate who was mayor of Baltimore after he married into the ruling family, who actually passed a law saying the government owns the rain that falls on your roof. He also passed a tax on millionaires that caused so many to leave the state that they had to repeal it just to keep from going broke.
Well, good job, my friend. Lowell, thank you so much for being on the program. For Nathan Staton, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.